Hello and welcome to the Philosopher's Zone, a weekly look at the world of philosophy and at what philosophy has to tell us about the world. I'm Alan Saunders, and this week we're meeting one of the all-time philosophical heavyweights. Socrates lived from 470 to 399 BC, and it's a measure of what a watershed he constitutes in the history of thought that the Greek philosophers who came before him, men as important as Pythagoras and Parmenides, are all lumped together under the name pre-Socratics. He was the son of a midwife and a stone cutter, and may even have done a bit of stone cutting himself, though we do know that he served in the Athenian army during the Peloponnesian War with Sparta, and was renowned for his courage, his ability to withstand hardship, and his extraordinary powers of concentration. He seems to have spent much of his adult life in the Athenian marketplace discussing ethical issues. He was ugly, poor, often went barefoot, and seldom bathed. Yet the powers of his personality and intellect were such that he gathered about him many young pupils and disciples. Now Socrates, like Confucius and Jesus Christ, was one of those influential figures in history who never wrote a book. It's mostly from the work of his pupil Plato that we learn what he said, or might have said, or in many cases just what Plato thinks he ought to have said. Plato wrote a series of dialogues in which Socrates is the main protagonist, and the early dialogues are generally felt to be the closest to the historical Socrates. And this week we're going to hear an edited version of one of these dialogues, the Euthyphro. It's about an ethical question that might seem a bit remote to us now, what is piety? And much of it involves Socrates dancing intellectual rings around the person he's talking to in a way that may sound, indeed is to some extent intended to sound, difficult to follow. But it's worth persevering with, because it's a good example of how relentlessly one of the first great philosophers of the West would pursue an issue. So, let me set the scene. The year is 399 BC, and two men meet by chance outside the court of one of the chief magistrates of Athens. They're both on legal business. Socrates is about to be tried for his life on the charge of corrupting the youth, and eventually he'll be condemned to death. Euthyphro, the other man, is taking legal proceedings against his own father. Apparently, after one of his labourers killed another in a drunken quarrel, Euthyphro's father had the man tied up and thrown into a ditch, where he died of cold and hunger. Euthyphro is trying to get his father charged with murder, because he thinks this is what piety demands. So Socrates decides that Euthyphro is just the man to tell him exactly what piety is. And our Socrates is Dr. Rick Benitez, who teaches at the University of Sydney. Rick, welcome to the Philosopher's Zone.
Thanks, Alan.
Well, you've got the star role. I'm going to be Euthyphro, and you've just asked me what piety is, so here's my answer. Piety is doing as I am doing, that is to say, prosecuting anyone who is guilty of murder, sacrilege, or of any similar crime, whoever he may be. And please to consider, Socrates, what a notable proof I will give you of the truth of my words. For do not men regard Zeus as the best and most righteous of the gods? And yet they admit that he bound his father because he wickedly devoured his sons, and that he too had castrated his own father for a similar reason.
And do you really believe that the gods fought with one another and had dire quarrels, as the poets say?
Yes, Socrates, and I can tell you many other things about the gods which would quite amaze you.
I dare say. But at present, I'd rather hear from you a more precise answer to the question, what is piety?
Piety is that which is dear to the gods, and impiety is that which is not dear to them.
Very good, Euthyphro. But the gods were admitted to have disagreements and differences.
Yes, that was also said.
And what sort of difference creates disagreement and anger? Suppose, for example, that you and I differ about a number. Do we not turn at once to arithmetic and put an end to them by sum?
True.
But what differences are there which cannot be decided that way, and which therefore set us at odds with one another? I'll suggest that these disagreements arise when the matters of difference are the just and the unjust, good and evil, honourable and dishonourable.
Yes, Socrates, this is the nature of the differences about which we quarrel.
And the quarrels of the gods, noble Euthyphro, are of a like nature?
Certainly they are.
Then the same things are hated by some of the gods and loved by others.
True.
And on this view, the same things, Euthyphro, will be pious and also impious.
I suppose so, but I believe, Socrates, that all the gods would be agreed as to the propriety of punishing a murderer.
Well, but speaking of men, Euthyphro, did you ever hear anyone arguing that a murderer of any sort or evildoer should be let off?
There is nothing the guilty will not say in their own defence.
But do they admit their guilt and yet say that they ought not to be punished?
No, they do not.
They do not argue that the evildoer should not be punished, but they argue about who the evildoer is and what he did.
True.
And it's the same with the gods. For surely neither god nor man will venture to say that the doer of injustice is not to be punished.
That is true, Socrates, in the main.
Well then, my dear friend Euthyphro, do tell me, for my better instruction, what proof you have that in the opinion of all the gods, a slave who is guilty of murder and dies because he is put in chains before he who bound him can learn from the interpreters of the gods what he ought to do with him, dies unjustly, and that on behalf of such a man, a son ought to accuse his father of murder? How would you show that all the gods absolutely agree in approving of his act?
It will be a difficult task, but I could make the matter very clear indeed to you.
Well, I won't ask you to prove this. Let's suppose, if you like, that all the gods condemn such an action. But I'll amend the definition so far as to say that what all the gods hate is impious, and what they all love, pious. Shall this be our definition of piety and impiety?
Yes, I should say that what all the gods love is pious and holy, and the opposite, which they all hate, impious.
The point which I should wish to understand is whether the pious is loved by the gods because it is pious, or pious because it is loved by the gods.
I don't understand you, Socrates.
I'll endeavour to explain. We speak of carrying, and we speak of being carried, of leading and being led, of seeing and being seen. You know that in all such cases there is a difference, and you know also in what the difference lies.
I think that I understand.
Well, now, tell me. Is a thing which is carried a carried thing because it is carried or for some other reason?
No, that's the reason.
And now I think, Euthyphro, that my meaning will be intelligible. And my meaning is that no thing gets changed because it is a changed thing, but it gets to be a changed thing because it has been changed. Do you not agree?
Yes.
And the same holds as in the previous instances. Something that is loved does not get to be loved because it is a loved thing. Rather, it gets to be a loved thing because it is loved.
Certainly.
And what do you say for piety, Euthyphro? Is not the pious, according to your definition, that which is loved by all the gods?
Yes.
It is loved because it is pious, not pious because it is loved?
Yes.
And that which is loved by the gods is loved because the gods love it?
Certainly.
Then, that which is loved by the gods, Euthyphro, is not pious, nor is that which is pious loved by the gods, as you affirmed. But they are two different things.
How do you mean, Socrates?
I mean to say that the pious has been acknowledged by us to be loved because it is pious, not pious because it is loved.
Yes.
But that which is dear to the gods is dear to them because it is loved by them, not loved by them because it is dear to them.
True.
But, friend Euthyphro, if that which is pious were really the same as that which is dear to the gods, and was loved because it is pious, then that which is dear to the gods would be loved because it's dear to them. But if that which is dear to the gods is dear because it's loved by them, then that which is pious would be pious because it's loved by the gods. But now you see that the reverse is the case, and that they are quite different from one another. For one is lovable because it is loved, and the other is loved because it is lovable. Thus, Euthyphro, I will ask you not to hide your treasure, but to tell me once more what piety really is, whether dear to the gods or not, and what is impiety.
I really do not know, Socrates, how to express what I mean. For somehow our arguments, on whatever ground we rest them, seem to turn round and walk away from us.
As I perceive you're lazy, I will myself endeavour to show you how you might instruct me in the nature of piety. Tell me, then, is not that which is pious necessarily just?
Yes.
And is everything that is just pious? Or is the case that, while everything that is pious just, only some things that are just are also pious?
I do not understand you, Socrates.
What I mean, I may explain by an illustration of what I do not mean. The poet sings, "With Zeus, the author of all these things, you will not quarrel, for where there is fear, there is also reverence." Now, I disagree with this poet. I should not say that where there is fear, there is also reverence. For I am sure that many persons fear poverty and disease, but I do not perceive that they reverence the objects of their fear. But where reverence is, there is fear. For he who has a feeling of reverence and shame about the commission of any action fears and is afraid of an ill reputation.
No doubt.
Then we are wrong in saying that where there is fear, there is also reverence. We should say, where there is reverence, there is also fear. But there is not always reverence where there is fear. For fear is a more extended notion, and reverence is a part of fear. So perhaps piety and justice are like this, and all just acts are pious, but piety is only a part of justice.
Piety, Socrates, appears to me to be that part of justice which tends to the gods.
That is good, Euthyphro. But what is the meaning of tending? Is not tending always designed for the benefit of that which is tended?
True.
And does piety, the art of tending the gods, benefit or improve them? Would you say that when you do a just or pious act, you make the gods better?
Let me simply say that piety is learning how to please the gods by prayers and sacrifices.
Do you mean a sort of science of praying and sacrificing?
Yes, I do.
I wish, however, that you would tell me what benefit accrues to the gods from our gifts. There is no doubt about what they give to us. But how we can give any good to them in return is far from being equally clear.
Well, do you imagine, Socrates, that any benefit accrues to the gods from our gifts?
But if not, Euthyphro, what is the meaning of gifts which are conferred by us upon the gods?
What else but tributes of honour and what pleases them?
Ah, piety, then, is pleasing to the gods, but not beneficial or dear to them.
I should say that nothing could be dearer.
Then once more the assertion is repeated that piety is dear to the gods.
Certainly.
And when you say this, can you wonder at your words not standing firm but walking away? Were we not saying that the pious was not the same as that which is loved of the gods? Have you forgotten?
I quite remember.
And are you not saying that what is loved by the gods is pious? And is not this the same as what is dear to them? Do you see?
True.
Then either we were wrong in our former assertion, or if we were right, then we're wrong now. We must begin again and ask, what is piety? I entreat you not to scorn me, but to apply your mind to the utmost and tell me the truth. For if any man knows, you are he, and therefore I must detain you until you tell. If you had not certainly known the nature of piety and impiety, I am confident that you would never, on behalf of a slave, have charged your aged father with murder. Speak out then, my dear Euthyphro. And do not hide your knowledge.
Another time, Socrates, for I'm in a hurry and must go now. Well, we have to go as well. Rick Benitez, thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan.
And Rick Benitez will be back in the Philosopher's Zone next week for a chat about Socrates, Plato, and the dialogue we've just heard. Meanwhile, stay with Radio National for Robin Williams and Occam's Razor.